Welcome to The Immutable Mindset. Join hosts Kevin Logan Jr. and Adam Posner as we delve into the revolutionary world of Web3 and blockchain technology, exploring the latest developments, trends, and future-forward concepts driving this rapidly developing technology. Strap on your digital seatbelt and prepare for the ultimate Web3 experience. Hey, everybody. Welcome to What is Happening on The Immutable Mindset. This is for episode 10 on the 17th of April, 2023. Adam and Kevin here. What's happening, Kevin?
Oh, sunny, beautiful day here in Seattle. It's actually nice outside. Might need to take off this long sleeve shirt and put on a short sleeve. How's it going where you're at?
It's almost tank top season. We had a beautiful summertime here during NFT NYC with temperatures were reaching the 90s. It was rooftop season, and now we got back to seasonal temperatures. Love and what it. I like to call the pollinating. We are in the pollinating period where every tree and grass is opening up and destroying my nasal passage. So I apologize.
Achoo.
All right, so let's get to it. So we're going to do what we did last week. It was pretty cool, where Kevin really doesn't know what I'm going to talk about. So I'm going to throw out some things that are happening in the Web3 space. But let's talk a little bit about Web2, and let's talk about a little brand called Adidas launching their ALTS, which is an NFT collection. What are your thoughts on the new Adidas launch?
Adidas is a, you know, Adidas is always a second mover. I feel like they're always a step or two behind Nike. And unfortunately, literally, this is the same. My thoughts on this, honestly, have to do with that. Nike announced their acquisition of Artifact. They teamed up with Clones. And then like 6 months later, Adidas comes out. It's like, you know what? I need to follow my big brother. So it feels like little brother following big brother's footsteps.
Well, the next point is this a big brother or a little brother move, where the London Stock Exchange is beginning to clear BTC index futures and options and offering a Bitcoin derivative. What does this mean?
I have so many thoughts on this. When the United States, as opposed to accepting an ETF, put forward a futures and derivatives, all that does, in my humble of opinion, I'm not the most market savvy human being, but I've done a thing or two. It allows people to control Bitcoin on leverage. And so I really wish the spot price action market reigned supreme. I wish market forces allowed market forces to reign supreme, but it feels like the governments are trying to steer ahead derivatives. And then what derivatives allow you to do is they really allow you to control price action with leverage. So instead of using actual dollars, you're using fake dollars. I don't like it. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of this. So let's talk about something cool. What's happening in a country that you lived in for a while, Japan. And Japan proposes some crypto tax reforms, new accounting standards, and a DAO via a white paper. So they're going full Web3 here. It's great to see from my perspective. Again, every other country out there aside from the U.S. is leading the way. What's your take?
Japan is an incredibly traditional country. They don't do anything without a lot of thought put behind it. And for those that know that the Bank of Japan, Kuroda, and now Ueda, who have been kind of spearheading and controlling yield curve, their yield curve control of the interest rates, you know that they really have their hands on their financial society. So the fact that they're really embracing the digital asset sphere, and the fact that they're willing to make changes to their tax structure and other things, makes me believe that they are absolutely embracing it. And Japan's going to be one of those countries that leads the way for Web3. I'm so excited, and I cannot wait to go back to my home away from home. Micah, shout out.
Yeah, we're going to make that happen soon. And on that same continent, Hong Kong financial leader said now is the right time for Web3 adoption. So it's good to see the world is waking up.
Yes. You know, Hong Kong a couple years ago was a hub for digital assets. There was some things happening with China, and then a bit of a takeover happening. And then now they're back. I visited Hong Kong myself. It is an awesome place. A lot of expats over there. I think the fact that they're entering the space and getting back into it is an awesome place.
Yeah, and on the same side also, the French Central Bank, they support DeFi, but they also support heavy regulation. Pesky French with their regulations.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I have this conversation with so many people. You know, if regulation was so awesome, then we wouldn't have all the financial crimes we have today, guys. So, you know, while I understand the need to protect people's assets and make people feel safe and secure, you know, that the people that are like, hey, regulation's going to stop all this, it's not going to stop it, guys. It's just going to put it in the hands of the government so they can better oversee the space. That's all. But hey, the French will do the French thing. So
the French will do the French thing. Good news. ETH is up post the upgrade. What are your thoughts?
Okay. Soapbox real quick. For all you fudders.
And now
for
Kevin's
all soapbox. You freaking fudders out there that told me I would never get my ETH out of my Coinbase. F you. Okay. Cause I believed you for a time. There was a time where Kevin was just soft-minded and just, I didn't believe it. Now it's okay. So anyway, we got our ETH. We're back. Everything's good. People can, it takes 12 days, but you can withdraw your ETH, but I wouldn't. And you know what's interesting? More people are depositing ETH than are withdrawing ETH. Interesting, isn't that? Now that you have a yield.
Now that we have a yield. Let's talk about Uniswap launching a mobile wallet. We were doing a live show today where we're talking where mobile is potentially the gateway to mass adoption. And hot take, it's pretty good what people are saying out there about the wallet.
It is. I played with it this weekend. It's savvy. It's easy to use, simple. That's exactly what we need, right? But in addition, the piece that people are missing is the Solana phone also came out, guys. Web3 is going mobile. I have not. I ordered it this weekend. Solana phone is coming. I will do the unboxing for you guys. I'll let you know. But Web3 is going mobile, y'all. Web3 is going mobile. That's the key.
That's where we get in.
That's the key to adoption. The killer app is mobile. Anyway,
I couldn't agree more. And last but not least, SushiSwap. They got back a portion of their hacked assets thanks to white hats. First and foremost, Kevin, what's a white hat for anyone out there who doesn't know?
Yeah, so a black hat hacker is a malicious hacker who is not on your side and will not be giving you your money back. And a white hat hacker is usually somebody who is either employed by the organization doing the hacking, or it's just a good human being, did the hack and is like, hey guys, by the way, you have a vulnerability here. Now I need a 10% bug bounty for what I've done.
Yeah, I like what they're doing there. Well, awesome. Well, we're excited to get into today's episode. We have the founder of and CEO of One Of, Mr. Lin Dai, who is going to break down. We're going to talk shop. This is a fantastic episode filled with tons of alpha, tons of knowledge, and tons of experience. So let's get into it. Sit back and enjoy episode 10 of The Immutable Mindset with Lin Dai. Here we go.
Welcome to another episode of The Immutable Mindset. Today, we're excited to welcome an extraordinary guest who's not only a visionary in the digital entertainment and blockchain space, but is also a pioneer who's constantly pushed the boundaries of innovation throughout his career. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm welcome to Lin Dai, a seasoned entrepreneur, digital executive, and changemaker. From founding the first social network and digital rewards platform for teens while studying at Carnegie Mellon, to taking companies public and revolutionizing the NFT space with Tap Network and One Of, Lin's journey is nothing short of remarkable. As the CEO and co-founder of One Of, Lin has forged partnerships with global icons like the Grammys, Warner Music, Sports Illustrated, and top artists from Doja Cat to Whitney Houston. Lin's commitment to creating a greener and more sustainable NFT platform has inspired many to set new standards for the industry. With a diverse background that spans across digital marketing, entertainment properties, web series, and live streaming events, Lin has gained valuable insights into the evolving world of blockchain technology, NFTs, and Web3. And as a general partner of Chainlink Crypto Fund, Lin continues to shape the digital currency landscape and help others navigate the exciting, complex world of blockchain and cryptocurrencies. Get ready to embark on an incredible journey, y'all, as Lin Dai shares his unique perspectives, expertise, and lessons he's learned along the way. Welcome to the Immutable Mindcast. And thank you, Lin.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, awesome. Appreciate you. You know, I think there's a lot of places and spaces where we can start, and we're kind of mentioning this as we were just getting on board here. But I really want to start with the state of things in the blockchain space. There's a ton happening right now between regulation, between how it feels like the government is trying to shape this industry, between what you hear of choke point 2.0 and just everything. Just curious, you know, what's your feel of the state of things today? You know, are we at the fight you stage? And just curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it feels like we are bottoming and, you know, we're still in the valley of despair, trying to climb out of it, but there's a lot of headwinds, right? So I think overall, like the right amount of regulation is needed in the industry, but it just comes at a time, certainly a little late for some of the consumer protection that should have happened earlier, but also at a time when the industry probably could use more support than kind of outright, like, you know, counter growth measures, right? So even the most compliant company, I would say Coinbase is in that category, you know, just got the Wells notice. And this is a company that for the last 10 years has gone to the SEC to say, like, please tell us what your, what the guide rails are. We are, you know, we want to be a compliant company. It's not encouraging that, you know, the government is taking kind of the stance it feels like it needs to take right now. But, you know, I think longer term, it's positive, right? Any guidance or guide rails and, you know, this is what you do, this is not what you do is helpful for companies building to actually know how to kind of build it in a compliant way and bring mass adoption, right? So, you know, all the innovation that come before this kind of lead up to this point, it's just how the industry and companies deal with this and be able to kind of turn this low point into a point of pivot is what's kind of important. I think I think that will kind of create a company that stands the test of time for the industry in the next 2 years.
And in that point, and given the, you know, the regulatory apprehension that founders and organizations are kind of at right now, and then along, as you said as well, right, we're climbing up the wall of worry. We're in the, you know, a place of despair. We're really trying to figure out what's going on. How have your conversation changed around the, you know, this regulatory environment in this bear market with the different players or maybe the partnerships that you might have broached before? Just curious how those conversations have changed or if they've changed.
You know, they haven't changed. I think there's definitely kind of, it's one of the topics of, you know, what is the regulatory view in this on certain things that we're working on. You know, oneof.com has been kind of our consumer-facing destination that everybody knows about. We've certainly done a lot of great work with the biggest musicians and celebrities in the world. But behind the scenes, for a couple of years before the launch of oneof.com, we have been working closely with enterprise companies, some of the world's biggest brands. You know, some already everybody knows about our work with the Warner Music Group and Anheuser-Busch's of the world. We are, you know, we are the Web3 partners to some of the biggest companies in the world, where we seeing the appetite and the drive to kind of develop the right solutions, even in this correction has not been abated, right? So, you know, I think for brands around the world, there's lessons that they learn from Web 1 and Web 2 that they do not want to repeat, right? In Web 1, basically everybody wrote off immediately after the crash that internet is not going to be a thing, and people went back to brick and mortar. And look, where is Borders Books or Blockbuster, right? Like the company that did not like invest in there. There's a stat that 50% of the Fortune 500 from year 2000 does not exist today. Right. Like that's, if crazy. We talk to our clients that enterprise clients that, like, basically, hey, like 50% of you may not actually survive the transition to Web 3. So it's existential. And Web 2, you know, what happened was brands did embrace it. Right. Brands, you know, I would argue is one of the major reasons why hundreds of millions of consumers embraced Web 2 and social media, got on social media, because, you know, the work. You know, I remember back in the day when I was in the space, in the advertising world, where all the work we did with, you know, major brands like Pepsi or whatever is to drive users on. And Pepsi brought like tens of millions of users onto Facebook, right? And guess what?
Yeah, like, they onboarded.
18 months later, the social media giants were basically like, well, you know, actually, in order for you to reach the user you have brought onto our platform, you're going to be able to reach them organically 7% of user. If you want to reach more, you have to pay us, right? Brands created a monster in, you know, a couple major Web2 tech giants. That was the mistake, right? Centralizing the access to audience to a couple platforms. In Web3, there's an opportunity to for any creators or artists or brands to own their full stack and relationship with the consumers. So, right, like, why do we rely on centralized, you know, kind of exchanges versus, you know, brands have the ability to deploy their own software?
To that end, just supremely curious, since we're talking about brands, how should brands think about integrating into Web3 to maintain that identity in their core values then?
Yeah, I think the last couple of years, all the experiments we've seen brands do that, like, you know, crypto nerds like me get very excited is just any announcement, right? Any announcement that like so-and-so brand dropped a collection, right? There's about like 2,000 of us.
Except Game of Thrones.
I mean, there, you know, and that was late in the game, right? Like earlier in the game, doesn't matter. You drop color triangle. We are trying to collect that, right?
Yeah. So I'm there. That's right.
Right?
I mean, it represents a interest in the space, and that's great. But you know, if you think longer term, how does that connect to the brand's core business? How does that evolve the brand's core business? I would say like 98% of the brand projects in the last 2 years didn't do that, right? You know, like Adidas did a great job. Nike did a great job. So those are projects that actually we can kind of now see like, oh, there is a bigger plan. This does relate back to their core business of
playbook
shoes. You know, but like for, you know, number one, if I were to talk to a brand new brand client, I would be like, what is the core business you're trying to future-proof, right? Is it selling books? Is it keeping, you know, your users on whatever subscription? Is it to kind of transition your services business into kind of a relationship business? Like there are kind of core business that you should care about regardless you're using Web 1, Web 2, Web 0, Web 3 tools, right? And most of the times, you know, if you think about Web 3 technology as broader than, you know, just digital collectibles or digital art or PFPs, there is a lot, right, the blockchain Web 3 stack can do fundamentally for just about, you know, like about 90% of the business model I can think of could be enhanced, right? So, you know, if you think about what fundamentally Web3 technology has kind of brought to light its capability is creating communities, right? And what is creating communities? Mm-hmm. Communities basically is what I describe is kind of turning, you know, for the last 100, 200 years, marketing discipline has been a one-to-many, right? Like one-to-many relationship. If I'm selling something, I am trying to reach you as a consumer and tell you a story and a reason, give you a reason to buy my product or services, right? And the best, right? And the maybe the last 10, 20 years, with the advent of the internet, there's a kind of the holy grail of like, how do we create one-on-one relationships, right? And like Web 1 kind of promised that, Web 2 kind of promised that, is how do I basically customize my message to you, right? But it's still a brand-to-consumer relationship. What Web3 does is it's a many-to-many relationship. Like your consumers are out there now advocating and educating other people in the community, right? That is very, very precious and hard to achieve, right? But the software, I mean, there's a lot of layer to that creating a community. It's not just software, but software, you know, easy to use software to enable that is a big piece of that, right? So, and if you think about what type of brands or enterprises care about their consumers as communities, I would say like probably 90% of them can benefit from kind of this system. And that probably means that is the future of marketing and the future of value exchange and engagement, right?
Yeah, this is great. And I just want to jump in for a moment here. And anyone listening at home, whatever level you are at, whether you're a, you know, expert, degen, noob, whatever, this is a masterclass right here that Lynn is breaking it down so we could really start to understand the timeline, because the timeline is important. I think people need context. There's so much information coming out right now, so much quicker than we ever had in the past. And the technology is actually, in my opinion, trying to catch up with the news that's out there right now. And I also want to take a quick moment here to first thank Lynn, Jen, and the entire gang over at OneUp. I've had the pleasure to have met these guys a couple of years back through, obviously, Chris Adamo, who had to be the spoke of pretty much everything in Miami and tech. So Lynn and Jen have been incredible Sherpas to me. And I just want to thank you for our friendship and our relationship. Before we get going here, I kind of feel like it's like the point of the concert where like, the first couple of songs get played and then the singer comes out. It's like, all right, I'd like to thank Miami here. Welcome everybody. Everyone having a good night tonight. All right, well, let's get the show going over here. I kind of feel like that. But Lynn, follow-up question. I'm very curious. You have some pretty in-depth conversations with senior-level executives, specifically on the Web2 side. Where are you seeing that resistance point? Where are you seeing that point where they're maybe willing to spend, but they can't break into that Web3 space. Where is that resistance point from a corporate leader decision-making standpoint as far as migrating into Web3?
Yeah, you know, I think collectively, you know, maybe the industry in the last two years has done ourselves we misaligned our interest with the kind of the next billion people or enterprise that's willing to adopt this, right? We basically super hyped up PFPs and digital collectibles in a way where people, when, you know, kind of the newcomers into the space, decision makers, right? All, if you bring up the word NFT, all they can think about is like, you know, is that a scam? And is that no longer kind of a thing anymore, right? So that, like, I would say, like, digital collectibles purely
for PR, it's a better
for PR sake, kind of went through its hype cycle, and that's kind of like almost entirely went away, right? So really the challenge is to combat that, is re-educate everyone that, like, hey, this is something very different. Like, I compare this to, and I try to kind of bring it back down to analogies that people, decision makers and people like my mom can understand, right? Like, why is a wallet important, right? Like, I was like, well, if in 1997 I come to a brand, right? Say you are a national pizza chain, and I was like, well, you guys think you're pretty good at, like, data, right? Like, you have addresses for all your consumer that lives around your store, and you mail them coupons every, like, 2 weeks, you know, and they are, like, coming to your stores, and you think you're pretty good at marketing. There's this thing in 1997, I would be like, there's this thing called email that's coming out, right? Like, you don't know what this is.
What do you mean?
It's kind of weird, and you have to type in a bunch of numbers, but, like, that is going to be, like, a much more efficient way to connect with the consumer, and that would be the preferred way. Consumers will say, like, please email me things,
they don't
send me things in my mailbox, right? And if you have a head start to start working on a strategy and a system to enable that, wouldn't you want to start doing that right now, right? And the investment is tiny compared to the threat of not being, having your competitor really kind of, like, be able to, like, connect with consumer in that way first, right? So, like, wallet is kind of in that weird stage where certainly we think that's going to represent consumers' digital identity, right? It's just, like, it's very weird and hard to use right now, and brands are like, we don't understand this. It's the fact that it's called a wallet is just, like, a kind of a misrepresentation.
I like the word account. I like account.
Yeah. So you had to kind of basically, like, hey, like, how do you represent that to consumers in things they already understand? Account is a great way to say that, right?
But we look at the web browser updates that are coming out there. The Microsoft one is integrating it. The first trickles of the Amazon experience have been leaked out there. It's happening. It's happening whether people like it or not. And whenever I talk to folks who are not in our industry and I bring up Web3, they're like, yeah, I don't really know about that. I'm like, yeah, they say the same shit about the internet in 95. You know, like, come on, guys. Like, get with the program here. Like, this is technology. This is advancement. This is new, but so is the internet. So is email, to your point. And we adopt it and we grow. This is technology and this is how it works. I just think the difference now, as I said before, is just there's so much information out there. There's so much more information. When the internet came out, people weren't reading stuff on the internet.
Right. Like, yeah, you know, the adoption cycle always like this, right? You know, you always have, like, a little bit of hype cycle in any technology that's worth adopting. It was kind of extreme, like, kind of 2021, which I thought was, like, in all my entire tech startup career, you know, I built a company in Web 1, I built a company in Web 2. Nothing is at the speed Web 3 moved. Like, that was, like, that 1 year, 2021, was, like, 10 years in previous
plus pandemic. Plus pandemic.
Yeah. So there was a lot of pent-up, like, unique situation that kind of brought a lot of attention to it. You know, I think now it's just kind of, like, up to the tech and company builders to kind of continue this phase to, right? The appetite is out there, right? Like, brands definitely understand that, like, Web3 is a thing. It's not going to go away. They may not understand how that technology can properly apply to their business, right? That's why company like us and a lot of other great companies are working to onboard, you know, brands and consumers in different ways, right?
So to that end, do you think there's going to be like some killer app that just makes sense to people? Is it that we need to adopt the Web2 verbiage, you know, accounts versus wallets, you know, make it make sense to, you know, even when we talk about like our parents, right? I say the same thing, Lynn, you know, I need to make this make sense to my parents. But I think that's the lowest common denominator because I have my sisters and my sisters are 25 and 37 and they grew up with this phone in their hand and exponential technology and they know technology. They use it every day. So like, I want it to make sense to somebody that's already involved in this space and then we can get to our parents. But just in considering how we're going to do this, do you think there's going to be some app? Is it going to be a blockchain game that brings this next adoption? Like, what do you think it is that's going to make it make sense to folks that it doesn't make sense to today that's going to want them to want to be involved in our community here in Web3 or Web 2.5?
I can answer that in two ways. So one, I think there's going to be many killer apps, right? So if you think about the adoption of internet, there's, you know, we couldn't imagine in 1999, I could just like summon a car to show up by a stranger and I get in comfortably and no, you know, I don't have to talk to them or take out money and I get to where I go, right? So like, there are going to be a series of killer apps coming out, but I think there is a potentially, you know, what's needed is probably there's going to be a watershed moment in interface, right? So if the internet adoption is, you know, I would count the watershed interface, you know, kind of early on was American Online, but then it's the iPhone, right? They made the internet feel like something manageable and graphical interface that's in your palm. We don't have that, right? It's not as easy. Like my mom can use an iPhone, but you know, my mom certainly don't know how to open and protect her MetaMask wallet. So
definitely not with a ledger.
Yeah, definitely not like any of those, right? Even the concept is very hard for many consumers to understand. My poor mom is actually, you know, pretty good because she, you know, I got her on oneof.com and she actually is, nice. But I use her as an example on like that, you know.
Now she's a power user.
Yeah, like, you know, she's the whale.
It's your collection.
She's the whale on the...
she's the whale. Screw Brendan Fraser, she's the whale.
But, you know, I think about also kind of all the enthusiasm, a lot of effort into building tools, specialized tools for the power users that really understand the space. If you think about Blur, that was a phenomenon earlier this year. Blur is built for power users, right? And that chess move forced OpenSea to change, abandon
their whole model,
its principles. I'm shocked for a company that was
crazy,
tens of billions of valuation that came out and was supported by creators that were abandoned so quickly for daily trading volume. You know, the industry just evolved so quickly around, you know, kind of use cases that is still very much for the power users and tech experts, and not enough people have come out with product yet that is really for kind of mass consumer adoption. So I think that's what's, you know, I think that is shifting, and hopefully over the next 2 years, there'll be multiple killer apps that is with interface and interfaces that is super easy to use, right, for the mass consumers.
The Immutable Mindset is proudly supported by Meta Intro, the professional resume wallet for Web3. The multi-chain custodial wallet holds proof of employment, proof of skill, proof of education, replacing the old PDF resume. Adjacent to the project, MetaIntro runs a massive Discord community dedicated to Web3 jobs. Around 4,000 opportunities are posted in the community every month. For more information on MetaIntro, head to www.metaintro.com. That's metaintro.com, or follow us on Twitter at MetaIntro. Thanks.
You brought up a point of emphasis I've been thinking about for a while, and now I have the perfect person to ask. I thought about that exact instance, and I thought about that a lot. If OpenSea, if you know, Amazon's getting into the space now, right? And they're going to be building the marketplace. If we replace OpenSea for Amazon, is that something that Amazon would do? Or are these Web3 companies, you know, are they sourcing for liquidity? Are they thinking short term? Is it because they haven't been involved in Web2 and they haven't built these companies? And I'm not speaking for everybody specifically, but I thought about that in terms of just Web2 brands. Like, that would not be a move a Web2 brand would make. There's no way on earth that Amazon would think about changing their business model based off a competitor move. So, you know, in thinking about that, is that a result of the infancy of our space and just, you know, kind of reacting? Or, you know, do you think that's something that an Amazon would, you know, a move that they would do? Just curious on your thoughts on that dynamic.
Yeah, no, I mean, Amazon's playing the long game, right? You know, public companies are playing the long game. They know they had to be in Web3. They don't have to be the first one to go out and dominate. They're going to, like, Amazon had like 300, we talked to them and they have literally 300 people, like engineering staff, working on, like,
oh, they're on it,
working on this, right? You know, and we are the Web3 partner, one of the Web3 partner for eBay. We built the integration into eBay for NFT capability, you know, more than a year ago. So companies are playing the long game, and all the software that was built by Amazon and for and by eBay's of the world are not like aimed at the crypto whales and expert traders, right? So, you know, kind of OpenSea kind of had two choice to, like, do you focus on, you know, do you try to cater to the 300? There's really only 300 wallets that was like active, represent 50% of the trading volume on Blur, right? Trading, yep. Do you really try to court those users, or do you try to, is the bigger existential threat Amazon?
Yep.
Like, where do you put your energy? And, you know, they kind of, it feels like that's kind of a very short-term policy and short-term business vision versus, like, shouldn't the biggest marketplace really focus on mass adoption and how to maintain, you know, its position without kind of, you know, being like outgunned and outpowered by, you know, by the Amazon of the world, right? Amazon don't even care about the 300 crypto whales, right? So that's not where the long-term business is going to be, right? The long-term business, if this technology is indeed how we're going to exchange all of the value in that represented in our world, in our lives, is much smaller transactions done, you know, billions and trillions of time by, you know, everyday consumers.
Yeah, I saw, you know, this year or every year, Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, writes this very infamous letter of what he kind of states is what he's looking out for the next year. And this year he talked about the tokenization of assets. And it really seems like big brands have been listening and gearing towards that. But now that we're kind of in the NFT space and talking about NFTs, I really want to bring our audience into one of. I'll speak specifically on the music side. I am supremely curious and have invested my time and learning and dollars in music NFTs. For me personally, on Opulous and then Royal, I got invested in those and just really understanding it's such an amazing idea. I'd love you to bring the audience into what one of is, you know, what you guys do, what you guys have been working on, and let's go from there.
Yeah, it's really great. So, you know, we, from the very beginning, we thought kind of Web3 and NFT technology has really great power to unleash the creator economy in a real way, right? So we're very close, you know, me and my co-founders, Josh and Adam, all worked in the music industry or with the music industry very closely. Adam is president of Quincy Jones Productions. And, you know, we basically envisioned a consumer platform that's built on top of our kind of enterprise-grade technology that really super served the creator community. And when we launched this oneof.com in 2021, you know, it was a curated marketplace platform, right? So which means the biggest artists in the world, Doja Cat or Biggie Smalls, will come to the Biggie Smalls estate, will come to us, and we will work with them hand in hand from conceptualizing strategy to actually designing the collection, to curating, to marketing, to offering it available for consumers with or without crypto knowledge on the oneof.com platform, right? Somebody could, with you know, that if you're not a crypto expert, you could, if you're just a music fan, you could just sign up, purchase your first NFT for maybe $5, maybe $25. You can bid on the super rare one for up to, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. But, you know, most of the transactions are kind of affordable collectibles that the artists want to share with the fans. So in that way, we experimented a lot with different ways this technology can impact the musician's career and revenue mix. If you think about the old model for the last 50, 40 years is an artist basically kind of plays the local clubs and writes songs and get themselves to a certain kind of notoriety.
Climb the ladder.
And yeah. Then they need financial support to get to that next level. Right, whether it's like to funding to record with the best producers or ability to market like nationwide to get you on radio or put you on the right tour, right? So you can open for Bad Bunny, whatever, you know, that works today. So that takes money. And there are basically enterprise companies, record label that basically fit that venture function, right? So they basically invest in artists. Now, being in venture in music is actually turns out to be pretty hard to do business. So, you know, like 4 out of 5 artists you sign may never really have a breakout hit, right? So essentially the labels were basically, okay, if that's the case, we want to, when we sign you, we'll take 85% of your earnings for your next, you know, 6 records. Right. And then the same.
And or isn't it that you get in advance and then you're spending like your next years just working that off, paying that off for them?
Right. Exactly. So the labels basically write you
a model is
for $1 million.
Almost indentured service.
Right. And then, you know, it's not just a label, right? The industry is one of like publisher companies, right? So does the same thing for songwriters, and then touring companies basically do the same thing for musicians on tour. Now, all three of those models are necessary, right, and works, but it's kind of on a model where artists are collateralizing their career. They're collateralizing their future earnings for a period of time, right? And that could be a very long period of time. So, and that's the only model that kind of was available to artists, right? And, you know, I'll say something very controversial. It's not necessarily the labels or the publisher's fault, right? Like, they have this offer, but like even artists, major artists that have completed their obligation to the labels, now they are free. There's no other model for them. So what you usually do is they go back to the label and negotiate another advance. Like, you know, I have now, you know, have free range. I don't want to do a rev share. I want, you know, like, why don't you pay me another $10 million and I'll lock up my next 3 contracts and, like, you know, album cycle with them, right? Now, NFTs and Web3 kind of represent kind of a alternative, right? An option for the artist to basically pre-fund their career with a promise to the fans instead of to the labels or the publishers, right? So fans, and for the first time, right, so can actually participate in the success of an artist. Like, all of us have basically essentially have that story of like, oh, when so-and-so was just playing at this club, or like I met so-and-so when they were playing my friend's birthday party, right? So, and you have nothing to really prove that, right? But imagine if you had Lady Gaga's like NFT when she's selling that to the NYU fans of hers.
Pretty
that
cool.
Like 100
Pretty cool.
of them that saw this show, right? And whatever that NFT comes with a promise to unlock like access or utility, right, in the future. That gives artists kind of the arsenal and tool to basically make a decision, you know, how they want to maybe fund their career. But also it represents really great opportunities for independent artists that may never get signed to a major label to really sustain their career in a way where, you know, you need 500 really good fans. You don't need to compete with Taylor Swift on Spotify algorithm, right? Which will never, you know, Spotify algorithm does not favor independent artists. We know that, right? You'll never make a living as an independent artist based on your streaming revenue versus, you know, Web3 represents a monetization, a promise, and an engagement opportunity with your maybe 500, 1,000 biggest fans. And even, you know, and that would sustain, you know, we think hundreds of thousands, if not millions, more creators to just full time work on their art, right? And it doesn't even have to be music. It just could be any type of art or entertainment you want to put out to the world. So that's really, really powerful. We think that's where it lies. So recently we announced that basically the one of creator self-mint platform. So what that is, you know, kind of for the first year and a half of our existence, only the biggest artists can work with oneof.com on a curated fashion. But what we what we just announced is the ability for creators to, just like we democratized for users to access and purchase without being a tech expert, we're now basically democratizing for creators to mint without being a technical expert, right?
Oh, I love that. That's why I love the technology behind NFTs, because it breaks barriers and it's really democratized finance, right? It's made us all accredited investors. We all have the ability to research things and research projects and these artists. And for the longest time, you've had to have a certain level of money and have a certain level of status to be able to invest in companies and people in these things. And we've democratized that through technology. One of the other ways that you really democratize this process is the way that you guys, the blockchains in which you've decided to build on, that being Tezos and Polygon. The big thing about them is, you know, Polygon, of course, being a scaling solution of Ethereum, but it democratizes the cost of it as well, so that now the fans have the ability to mint at low prices and really be immersed and really have the ability to tap into these networks. So curious, what inspired you to focus on these green NFTs and these blockchains? And then how are you ensuring that your platform remains eco-friendly in that sense?
Good question.
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit of history on kind of why we founded, how we founded oneof. In 2015, I left my previous company, which we took public in Canada. I was a Web2, you know, video social media company. And really, I came back to New York, was taking some time off, you know, when kiteboarding and met the VC, Bill Tai, who was one of the first VC in the blockchain space. And we were talking about the applications for blockchain for non-financial kind of sectors, right? So that's kind of the genesis, what it eventually led to me spending, going down the rabbit hole and really figuring out our, you know, what we wanted to do. And Bill and the group are also, you know, really a huge impact and, you know, has been a mentor to me, but also, you know, environmental sustainability is a huge part of that whole group of VCs and entrepreneurs. And we, from the very beginning, right, when in 2017, Bill came to me, was like, you had to look at these blockchain cats, was CryptoKitties. We immediately saw the potential, but also immediately was like, well, this is not going to scale, right? For both like business and environmental reason, right? It costs too much and it's environmentally not sustainable. So, you know, imagine talking to every music artist and celebrity in the world. I'll bet like 99 of those people are very concerned about kind of putting their name next to something that is, you know, kind of environmentally friendly or not. So we knew we had to develop a different solution. So proof of stake was very much a new thing in kind of 2017, 2018 era. It was a concept, it was a theory, right? That, you know, it took like 3-4 years for everyone to galvanize around. Tezos was one of the definitely OG, like proof of stake chains, which means, you know, they were energy efficient. And certainly by 2019, 2020, when we were kind of really ready to kind of go live with a commercial product, that was kind of one of the only viable technical solve at the time. And then certainly Polygon had gained a ton of traction and doing the right thing. And on top of all those already energy efficient chains, we basically developed a proprietary minting method called PowerMint that actually effectively reduces effective gas fees and energy consumption by another factor of like, you know, up to 99% less gas fees, right? So we basically made it so if music artists want to sell digital merch, it's essentially less than a penny cost to mint on any of the proof of stake blockchains. And it could be up to 2 million times more energy efficient than Ethereum proof of work, right? So Ethereum done a great job kind of transitioning to proof of stake, but, you know, I think we're talking about a 10,000-fold reduction in energy, right? So our basically combination of software plus on top of energy efficient blockchains are able to achieve up to a 2 million times energy reduction and 99% reduction in gas costs. That's, I would say that's like table stakes, right? That's like what fundamentally need to be solved in order to even make somebody like my mom or the mass consumer interested, because you can't be charging consumer fees or like, you know, make them kind of responsible for buying carbon offset. Those are just like, that's a non-starter, right? So we took a couple of years to really kind of tackle those problems before we even came out with our first version of the software. We're on version 3 of our software now. It's really exciting to, you know, what this technology can do.
Just curious real quick, as we're kind of wrapping up here, you discussed PowerMint. I'm actually a little bit curious as to just what you guys develop with that. Would you mind just diving in just a little bit on PowerMint?
Yeah, you know, the concept is a lot of NFTs, NFTs can be totally unique, or they could be just additioned mints of the same graphic, right? The only unique difference is your edition number and the actual blockchain record of that item. They could actually be visually the same item. You could be an artist that want to issue, you know, 10 editions of your painting. Well, Corey Van Loo did this one. You know, I think we released like 100 or 200 editions of the same art. Or it could be, gotcha. Let's say, it could be your airline deciding to release a rewards NFT that represents, you know, a upgrade certificate in your system, right? To upgrade you from coach seat to first class seats. Or those are the exact same function, right? And look, right? And it just, like, it's a different, it's a limited edition. There's maybe 1,000 of those or 10,000 of those certificates available. So for those, what PowerMint really come to shine is, imagine this is you're creating one giant bar of chocolate. Right. So it's the same chocolate, just one giant bar of chocolate with a range of 1 to 10,000. Right. And then when the consumer is basically the NFT starts its life as one transaction instead of 10,000 transactions. And consumers basically, you know, when consumer mint, it's one of the two options, right? If you're a tech expert, you can mint directly with your wallet. That's basically one transaction. And if you're my mom, you basically are choosing to have the platform that you trust, you know, key manage for you, right? So then that does not require a second transaction until you decide to export that into your self-custody wallet. So effectively what we see, right, because we're aiming at mass adoption, we are actually seeing, you know, even the tech experts are sometimes on our platform, you know, up to 99% of them are choosing to, it's just easier to kind of transact inside the ecosystem than exporting those, even though they have the full kind of option to do so. So effectively, you know, I think we're talking about, for the foreseeable future, we can kind of maintain and achieve a much lower transaction needs, right? So
yeah, no, for mass adoption, that's absolutely what we're going to need. No question. So thank you for breaking that down. My last question here, you know, I really try to leave folks with actionable advice in some way, shape, or form. You're somebody that's built organizations from web 1 to web 3. What advice would you give to businesses and individuals, you know, that are looking to enter blockchain, web 3, and cryptocurrency space right now? Obviously, we have the ever evolving landscape, and then, you know, just really identifying opportunities and threats. What advice are you giving to businesses that would want to consult with you as to how do we get involved?
Yeah, you know, now it's the time to learn and build. It's still early, right? So we're talking about probably, you know, it's going to take in the next like 1 to 2 years, well, we're going to start seeing kind of a new use cases being kind of presented. I think it'll probably take 3 to 4 years or even more for real kind of mass adoption, right? So, you know, if you are a fan who is interested in learn more about a space, there's no better time to learn now. There are thousands of use cases that has not been uncovered with creativity and like understanding of the technology. You can be unstoppable even if you start learning today. Like my knowledge is only slightly ahead of some of the newer people because I'm learning every day still, right? Like I'm trying to look at what my peers and my comrades and like, you know, my colleagues in different companies are doing. And they're just great work being done by lots of amazing companies. And to brands, I would say like basically, you know, the be curious, right? So, and work with the company that is building solutions and be open to all sorts of new solutions, right? So, you know, I'm biased. I think our solutions are, you know, some of the greatest for lots of use cases.
But, sure, why not?
But, they sound pretty good. They sound pretty good.
But, you know, we're not going to be able to service every brand in the entertainment space or outside of entertainment space. There are dozens of great companies that I'm aware of doing great work. It's going to take the collective industry to really kind of usher in mass adoption. And I think kind of like going through convincing enterprise stakeholders who have existing tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of consumers is almost a quicker shortcut to adoption, right? We've seen this in Web 1, we've seen this in Web 2. This, you know, it's going to happen, right? So
it is. Yeah, awesome. I'll end on, yeah, I totally think the landscape that you see today is nothing like it's going to be tomorrow. And if you need any kind of purview into that, just wait till Amazon comes. I used to work there, and trust me, when they go in, they don't do anything small. So I'm looking. Adam, was there any last question that you had before we wrap up?
No, this is awesome. I just want to thank Lynn for all of his wisdom and sharing with us in our audience.
Yeah. Well, as we wrap this incredible conversation with Lynn, and I do appreciate it, I just want to take a moment to recap some of the key takeaways from our discussion. And you know, it starts with the power of NFTs and music in the entertainment industry. Lynn emphasized the potential of NFTs to redefine the value of digital assets and provide new avenues for support for artists and creators. You know, two would be the growing influence of Web3 and its impact on businesses and consumers. We explore the opportunities and challenges presented by the mass adoption of Web3 and all its potential to disrupt traditional systems. And then the last two I'd say are the importance of sustainability in the blockchain space. Lynn's commitment from, you know, with oneof.com and creating eco-friendly initiatives. You heard about Powerment, you know, highlights that need for the industry to prioritize sustainability without sacrificing the functionality that we're trying to create. And then lastly, I'd say is, you know, which is an ever-present, unfortunately, today, navigating the evolving regulatory landscape. Lynn offered his perspectives on the current regulations surrounding cryptocurrencies, NFTs, and Web3, and how that landscape may change in the future. So hope everybody pays attention to that. I just want to thank everybody today for tuning in today's episode of The Immutable Mindset. We had an incredible conversation again with our guest, Lynn Dai. We hope this discussion has sparked your curiosity, inspired you to think a little bit more about the future of technology and how it's going to reshape our daily lives. We didn't even talk about AI, guys. Lynn, let the people know where to find you on social and let them know of anything else that you have coming up that they should know about.
Yeah, just go to lynn.ai. No, I'm just kidding. You can find... You can find
I like that. Funny dad joke.
All the work that that oneof is doing at oneof Web3 on all social platforms, and my personal social handle is the points die DAI, my last name instead of the points guy. So you know, I'm a rewards and points nerd, can I say?
Nah, we love it. We love it. As we wrap up, we just want to ask the audience: take a moment, share this episode with somebody who you think could find it valuable. If you heard Lynn, he gave you ample reasons why. And don't forget to subscribe to The Immutable Mindset on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. Once again, thank you all for joining us today. Again, thank you, Lynn. Really appreciate you, Adam. Everybody take care, stay curious, keep exploring, and always challenge the status quo. Bye, y'all. Thank you for listening to The Immutable Mindset. We appreciate you for joining us. Please follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Immutable Show. Subscribe, comment, and network, and catch us next week for more. Take care, folks.